Chapter 30. Untutored infant of the sixth, and then railed her, because she couldn't get their drift, and when she was making the honest best drive at it she could too, and no fault of hers, that she couldn't fetch the home plate, and so I apologized. Then we meandered pleasantly away toward the hermit holes in sociable converse together, and better friends than ever. I was gradually coming to have a mysterious and shuddery reverence for this girl. Nowadays, whenever she pulled out from the station and got her train fairly started on one of those horizonless transcontinental sentences of hers, it was borne in upon me that I was standing in the awful presence of the mother of the German language. I was so impressed with this that sometimes when she began to empty one of these sentences on me, I unconsciously took the very attitude of reverence and stood uncovered. And if words had been water, I had been drowned, sure. She had exactly the German way. Whatever was in her mind to be delivered, whether a mere remark, or a sermon, or a cyclopedia, or the history of a war, she would get it into a single sentence or die. Whenever the literary German dives into a sentence, that is the last you are going to see of him till he emerges on the other side of his Atlantic with his verb in his mouth. We drifted from hermit to hermit all the afternoon. It was a most strange menagerie. The chief emulation among them seemed to be to see which could manage to be the uncleanest and most prosperous with vermin. Their manner and attitudes were the last expression of complacent self-righteousness. It was one Ancherite's pride to lie naked in the mud and let the insects bite him and blister him unmolested. It was another's to lean against a rock all day long, conspicuous to the admiration of the throng of pilgrims and prey. It was another's to go naked and crawl around on all fours. It was another's to drag about with him, year in and year out, 80 pounds of iron. It was another's to never lie down when he slept, but to stand among the thorn bushes and snore when there were pilgrims around to look. A woman, who had the white hair of age, and no other apparel, was black from crown to heel with 47 years of holy abstinence from water. Groups of gazing pilgrims stood around all and every of these strange objects, lost in reverent wonder, and envious of the fleckless sanctity which these pious austerities had won for them from an exacting heaven. By and by we went to see one of the supremely great ones. He was a mighty celebrity. His fame had penetrated all Christendom. The noble and the renowned journeyed from the remotest lands on the globe to pay him reverence. His St. Anne was in the center of the widest part of the valley, and it took all that space to hold his crowds. His St. Anne was a pillar 60 feet high, with a broad platform on the top of it. He was now doing what he had been doing every day for 20 years up there, bowing his body ceaselessly and rapidly almost to his feet. It was his way of praying. I timed him with a stopwatch, and he made 1,244 revolutions in 24 minutes and 46 seconds. It seemed a pity to have all this power going to waste. It was one of the most useful motions in mechanics, the pedal movement. So I made a note in my memorandum book, purposing someday to apply a system of elastic cords to him and run a sewing machine with it. I afterward carried out that scheme and got 5 years' good service out of him, in which time he turned out upward of 18,000 first-rate tow linen shirts, which was 10 a day. I worked him Sundays and all. He was going, Sundays, the same as weekdays, and it was no use to waste the power. These shirts cost me nothing but just the mere trifle for the materials. I furnished those myself. It would not have been right to make him do that, and they sold like smoke to pilgrims at a dollar and a half a piece, which was the price of 50 cows, or a blooded racehorse in Arthurdom. They were regarded as a perfect protection against sin, and advertised as such by my knights everywhere, with the paint pot and stencil plate, insomuch that there was not a cliff, or a boulder or a dead wall in England, but you could read on it at a mile distance. By the only genuine St. Stillite, patronized by the nobility. Patent applied for. There was more money in the business than one knew what to do with. As it extended, I brought out a line of goods suitable for kings, and a knobby thing for duchesses and that sort, with ruffles down the forehatch and the running gear clued up with a feather stitch to leeward, and then all daft with a backstay and try set up with a half turn in the standing rigging forward of the weather gaskets. Yes, it was a daisy. But about that time I noticed that the motive power had taken to standing on one leg, and I found that there was something the matter with the other one, so I stocked the business and unloaded, taking Sir Bors de Ganis into camp financially along with certain of his friends, for the works stopped within a year, and the good saint got him to his rest. But he had earned it. I can say that for him. When I saw him that first time, however, his personal condition will not quite bear description here. You can read it in the Lives of the Saints. All the details concerning the hermits in this chapter are from Lecky but greatly modified. This book not being a history, but only a tale, the majority of the historian's frank details were too strong for reproduction in it. Editor. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.